Hi, this is Cass. Welcome to the Curio Podcast, where two old friends hash out current events, politics, and whatever strikes our fancy. Visit us on Twitter at Podcast Curio. Join our Facebook page. Check out our website, curiopodcast.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening.
Dun da 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 dun 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 da da dun da da da.
I wasn't expecting that.
I know.
Hey, Cass.
Hey, Kim. How are you?
I'm okay.
It's really hot today.
It's really hot.
And we can't run the air conditioner in the studio because it's really loud and you guys would just hear.
Nobody wants that.
No.
No. So we're hot and bothered. We're for you guys.
We're suffering for you. I hope you appreciate it.
How hot did it get today?
Earlier it was 100.
Okay. I saw 102 at one point, but it felt much hotter to me.
Yeah. So 100 degrees Fahrenheit plus here in California, in LA, we usually don't have that much humidity, but it was very humid today. Mm-hmm. So it felt extra heavy, like a really heavy hot blanket.
Yeah.
And we're not used to that. Both Kim and I, when we came together this evening, she said, I almost passed out earlier. And I said, me too.
Our fragile flowers.
We caught the vapors. So what are we talking about tonight, Kimmy?
Women and art.
Women in art or women and art or women artists? Or
yes.
Oh, cool.
How women happen to be in art. Across the board.
Okay.
I started to dig into this and I rabbit holed severely and I couldn't rein myself in.
Yeah.
Like it just went all over the place. So I just let it go. I mean, what else can I do? Wait. It's a really interesting topic.
Yeah.
How women are depicted in art throughout history.
Yep.
Women artists and how they have come to be mainstream in a very difficult way. You know, they were not encouraged to be artists.
No.
The art that we now consider to be art forms previously were just considered crafts.
Oh, yeah.
And women were in charge of those. Mm-hmm. Mostly things that required fine motor skills, which...
Or patience.
Or patience. Well, painting.
Yeah.
Painting.
Yeah.
But fiber arts, pottery,
right.
Useful things for the home, for living. Back to the, you know, dawn of time.
Humanity. I've got hands. Let me make things.
Right.
So
it's a lot.
I didn't do anything because...
You were busy making pottery.
I was busy making pottery. And also, I had the period from hell and my brain is not working. And so I am here to learn from you and maybe pipe in if necessary. But this is all you.
Wow.
I could tell you about my favorite paintings of the ones I've seen or whatever, but...
I think we should talk about our favorite ones. The ones, painting, sculpture, any art form that's really captured our attention.
Mm-hmm.
Or inspired an emotion. You know, something that's stuck with us. That's art's job.
It is.
And some art does that job better with some people and... not with others, and it's a very fluid thing, you guys.
Oh my God, you sound like an artist.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll tell stories about a painting that we got emotional over. All right.
My time. I We're back.
Woohoo! So, I've talked about it before, but going to Italy, I love Italy. I love the Italian culture, the language, the Renaissance, everything about it, the food, you name it. The guys, their eyebrows, they're the best in the world. Okay. I went to the Uffizi Gallery the first time I went to Florence, and I love Florence. It feels like...
Isn't it like a little time capsule? Like a
so much. It feels like you're just walking around in a museum.
Oh.
And there's a 2,000-year-old sculpture just out on the street. And you're like, oh, nobody's bothering it. And there's not a guard around it. You can go up and touch it. Wow. So the whole town is that way. You know, Dante's apartment where he was born is there. You know, it's just everywhere is historical. So we go to the Uffizi. And, you know, it's one of the best museums in the world. And we walk into the room where the Birth of Venus is, and Primavera, the two most popular Botticelli paintings. And I walk into that room, and I burst into tears.
Aww.
I don't know why. I mean, I've always loved the Birth of Venus, but seeing it in person did something to me that I, you know, you're already in Florence, Italy. You're already having this, or I was already having this, like, otherworldly experience there. Uh-huh. And then to walk into that room and see that, those paintings there.
Yeah. You're misty.
I am. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I sat down. There's, like, a bench in the middle of the room. And I sat down and I just cried looking at the Birth of Venus. And they're huge. They're giant. They cover walls.
It's amazing.
So... that's my story about probably the time I was most emotionally influenced by a painting. And I'm not sure that it's the painting so much, but I do love that painting. Like, I've done embroidery of the face of Venus from that painting, you know, things like that. I've always loved that painting, but...
It's like meeting a rock star.
It
or
is.
A celebrity or just somebody that you deeply admire. I know what you're talking about, and it's hard to explain.
Right.
It's like being in the presence of the divine almost.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that way. Oh my gosh. When I was at the Chicago Institute of Art.
Is that the Ferris Bueller Museum?
That's the Ferris Bueller Museum.
Okay. I knew it was. I was just messing with you.
But it's just like, you know, everywhere you look, pieces are so familiar to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden to see it in person.
Right.
To get up next to a Van Gogh painting and see the brush strokes.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like you put your hand through time.
Right.
It's an otherworldly experience.
You and I went to that Van Gogh exhibit at LACMA probably 15, 20 years ago. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. 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 20 years ago, I believe.
Was it 20 years ago?
Uh-huh. It's a long time ago. And the self-portrait was there.
Yes.
I
remember in that trip feeling very connected to those paintings because I could see the brushstrokes.
Uh-huh.
I could, it almost transports you back in time to when that artist was alive. If you can see it up close and personal,
yeah.
It's a different experience than seeing it on your computer screen or in a book.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think in my hoobity-boobity way that it puts off some kind of juju.
Hoobity boobity?
Hoobity boobity juju. When an artist spends that much time creating a piece, I cannot imagine there's not some kind of unseen exchange of energy that happens there. You know what I mean? The whole, just the act of carving something, having your hands on it, the brush strokes, the meditative process that happens when art is being created.
Right.
So it's a shame that women have been denied that throughout history.
Well,
Let me just...
They've been denied notoriety about it.
They've been denied notoriety.
Right. And money, I'm sure. And a place in history. But go ahead. Sorry.
Well, and, you know, women were not encouraged to even become educated or much less trained to make pieces of art.
Right.
And they did it on the sly, or they would create pieces and pretend that they were a man. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some people think that Shakespeare was a man. I mean, a woman. Just because of his writing style.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never heard that theory, but that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, doesn't no, it? My whole brain is changing.
Dun, dun, dun.
It was already a hairball's nest in there. So what gave you the idea to want to do this topic?
Well, I was at the Dead & Company tour roundup, not roundup, but end of the tour shows in Boulder, and John Mayer sings a song called Althea, and that was one of Jerry's songs from mm-hmm. the Grateful Dead, and I've always loved that song. The lyricist, Robert Hunter, one of two lyricists for the Grateful Dead, his lyrics are very up to interpretation. And everybody who is familiar with his songs kind of digests them a little differently. And even throughout time, listening to them, you know, right. all of a sudden you'll hear it again and you'll say, oh, so there's that piece of it, that facet. You know, right. it's like you can turn it around and look at it in different ways. And Jerry always sang the song. Let me start at the beginning of what the song is about. The song is about a man who goes to see Althea, and she is obviously a mature, wise woman, a confidant, like a companion to him. And he goes to her for advice. He's worried. There's something happening with him, and he needs advice. And so she basically throws down the truth to him, and he accepts it. And then he says to her, I'm born to be a bachelor. And she says, okay, that's fine. Like, whatever, you know. And one of the main lyrics of the song is, talking or thinking. Sometimes the lyrics change when they sing them.
Yeah.
Talking or thinking about less and less and forgetting the love we bring. So when Jerry sang the song, to me, it always sounded very mature, very, very much as if they were companions. They'd known each other for a long time. And it kind of just conveyed that ease that you have with somebody whom you trust and share history with.
Mm-hmm.
When Mayer sings it, there are sexual undertones. And I don't know if it's because he Mayerizes it.
Right. He's like a confirmed bachelor, right? He's like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's a ladies man. He's got a reputation and everything.
Right.
But his execution of the song is beautiful. You know, his guitar work and everything is just amazing. It's a whole different dimension to that song. But it occurred to me as I was listening to him sing it that the deliveries were very different. And much the way my son texted me photos of Venus of Urbino and Manet's Olympia.
Uh-huh.
And the difference between those two reclining nudes.
Right.
So Olympia's more cold, her posture's very stiff, she stares at the viewer very coldly.
Kind of like with an attitude.
With an attitude.
Right.
Whereas Venus is, she looks very seductive, she's in a very welcoming pose and relaxed.
Mm-hmm. More curvy, more luscious looking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The tones are different. The tones in the Venus painting are warm,
mm-hmm.
Whereas Manet uses cooler tones.
Right.
And Olympia is, she looks almost anemic. So I got to thinking, like, how are women portrayed in art and music as well? So there are other Grateful Dead songs, and I explored that those songs a little bit too, and I kind of went through and made a list of the songs that are specifically about women.
Just Grateful Dead
just
songs?
Just the Grateful Dead.
Oh, wow.
Thousands of songs. I mean, a lot of them are old folk tunes, but there was a theme, and I thought it was interesting that, you know, one song is kind of an idealistic, very youthful version of a man's relationship to his girlfriend. And I say girlfriend because the song is very, I don't want to say juvenile, but it's very youthful.
Right.
And idealistic. And then there's another song where the woman is portrayed as absolutely out of reach. Like, her confidence is so off the chain. She's totally out of his league.
Right.
Like, and he just watches her. He just watches her go by. Like, oh, well, I can't go there. You know what I mean? And then there's another one where an old folk song where she's the hero. She is portrayed in a very strong way. So it was just interesting to kind of think about how Robert Hunter and the Grateful Dead have chosen to portray women as opposed to, say, rap music. Or
as opposed to the way women would portray women?
Right. So, right. Well, in music, so how...
I have an example, actually, because when you and I started talking about this, I had thought of Primavera and The Birth of Venus, and then I thought of the song Respect by Aretha Franklin, because...
Oh, yes, yeah.
Because that song, to me, it almost taught me about being a woman. I remember hearing it and not realizing that women could ask for things that they wanted.
Right, yeah.
So when we started talking about this topic, I went and looked it up. So Aretha didn't write that song. It was originally an Otis Redding song.
Oh, really?
And the meaning was completely different. She reworked
it. She tweaked it.
She tweaked it, and she made it into basically a feminist anthem. But his original meaning was like, oh, I've been out on the road. I'm bringing home all this money. All I need is a little respect when I get there. Right.
Wow.
So she took that and turned it around and was like, I deserve your respect.
Yeah. Guess who else? Yeah.
So the same, almost the same exact song in two different hands, two different genders, two completely separate meanings, two completely different songs.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting. I didn't even know if I would want to talk about it tonight, but the way that you're talking about the Grateful Dead, it was very similar with that song, which I identify with so much. And it's one of my earliest memories of music is that song.
It's a very powerful song.
It's a very powerful song.
And chances are good. I mean, I remember it from being very young.
Right.
And I'll bet that when our moms heard it on the radio, volume got turned up a little bit.
Right.
You know what I mean? There was a reaction that we could understand
right.
at a young age.
Apparently, it originally was a ballad, and she added the R-E-S-P-E-C-T to, you know, put a point on it. Give me my respect. Let me spell it out for you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Let me spell it out for you.
So it's an interesting concept. You know, there's not a lot of women in art history.
Mm-mm.
What is the world missing? Because we don't know what could have been or what was and is lost.
Right.
I know we get into existential things like that a lot, but it's an interesting concept to think about.
It is. And especially if you go historically, like, which is exactly what you're saying, but there's an absence of women artists for thousands of years. And
That we know of. Yeah.
But, like, one of the first depictions of a woman is the Venus of Willendorf.
Mm-hmm.
And she was thought to be a small carved figure with exaggerated sex organs, breasts, hair, thighs. And it's believed to have been a fertility talisman. Mm-hmm. They found them in fields. There's tons of them all over the place, all over Europe. They're still finding them. So nobody knows who carved them, but chances are good it was a woman. But then once once the church starts to
pay people to make the Madonna, is that what you're getting to?
Pay people, well, that's how artists got paid in the Renaissance and around that era.
Right.
Was the church.
Right.
They couldn't afford to just paint for fun, you know, and nobody's has the money or resources to say, hey, would you like to paint a picture of my dog? You know what I mean?
And also like, back then, paints were really expensive.
They were very expensive and difficult to come by and make.
Right.
So the church.
Yeah.
The church had these frescoes painted, Da Vinci, Michelangelo, and those pieces of art were only seen in churches, and they were used to depict the Bible, which had been...
Is also up for interpretation.
But the painters, the people commissioning these pieces were men. Mm-hmm. The Bible was sent to the printing press by men. It was reinterpreted by men. Mm-hmm. And so women lost their place.
Well, they lost their complexity also. You're either a Madonna or a whore. Exactly. For a really long time, that's all women were depicted as, the Madonna or the whore.
Exactly. So how that shapes our modern society?
I mean, I don't even think we could contain it yet.
No.
I mean, if you think about, like, even movies today, there are a lot of female characters that are just not complex. Again, they're still being depicted as the Madonna or the whore, the best friend or the...
They're being objectified.
Yeah.
And so it's... If you think of, like, society and culture as an ecosystem, there have been some casualties. There have been some... extinctions. And I think that a positive representation of women was extinct a long time ago, which makes me sad.
And you think it existed at some point?
I have to believe it did.
Okay.
Maybe before we could, maybe on materials that have been lost to time, you know, but the Venus of Willendorf was there.
Right.
You know, she was there. She was buried in fields. She was hope.
Right.
She was evidence that at one time people thought, wow, women are magical, special things that have power to
grow things. And these big thighs are pretty.
These big thighs are pretty. So, you know, when I think of it that way, it makes me really sad. Like, wow, that has been... It's gone, you know, like a glacier or saber-toothed tiger or whatever. but it still comes back once in a while. And if you look, you know, if you look at the songs and the artists, the contemporary ones, and some of the paintings throughout history portray women in very positive ways.
Yes. And you can say a lot of bad things about the church giving artists money, but I think that it definitely... helped the culture of art grow.
Oh, yes, indeed.
For sure. And then when the Medicis came along, excuse me, I have to say this correctly, Medici, when the Medicis came along and had enough, you know, had more money than the Pope, and they could basically fund the Renaissance, but they were still men. But I've thought about this a lot when you go to museums and, you know, the first half of whatever historical timeline is all Madonna, 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 Madonna. And you're like, okay, I've seen the same pose 14,000 times.
By the way, she was brown.
Right. Why is she white with blue eyes? But without that money coming from the church paying artists, we might not have as sophisticated art as we have mm-hmm. now. I think it definitely moved things along.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And it gave an appreciation and people started to understand it. And, it, you know.
Well, and I think because maybe it came from the church, it was more reverent. It was more divine. It was looked
more
on
respected
like,
and...
right. Oh, this is almost, you know, godly. This painting of God. I don't know.
Right.
But I can tell you, I went all the way to Rome and did not go inside the Sistine Chapel because by the time I got to Rome, I had seen enough churches and enough religious paintings that I was like, I do not care what's in there. I just don't care.
You're like, okay, I know.
I get it.
There's going to be some wood and some stained glass and some crosses. There's going to be some jewelry hanging on the wall someplace and fancy robes and maybe some skulls. Whatevs. Well, that's another interesting piece of the pie, too, is architecture. I don't know really how that fits into women.
Well, I think that's an industry that women have been kept out of for a long time.
Right. There's not a lot of participation in that
right.
that way. But as far as, you know, sculpture and painting and music and subsequently in modern times, advertising.
Right.
Which is kind of jumping far ahead. But like I said, I was all over the place when I was thinking about this.
I'm following it. I'm in your hairball with you.
Sorry, Ziggy. So, oh, there was another song that occurred to me by Bob Dylan, mm-hmm. and it's called She Belongs to Me.
Oh.
Which is a very deceptive title.
Right.
And it's the one that starts out, I don't know if you're familiar with it, she's got everything she needs. She's an artist. She doesn't look back.
Right.
So if you listen to the lyrics very carefully, he describes every way possible she cannot be owned. Like how she is on a pedestal. She is this, I don't even want to say goddess. She's better than a goddess. She has everything she needs. She has no place to fall. She doesn't stumble. She has no place to fall. Nobody's going to catch her. She knows that. She is solid and complete as is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about the title of that song, and I couldn't figure out if Dylan is, if it's kind of a little joke.
Yeah, a little tongue-in-cheek.
Or if it's just, it alludes to the fact that the only thing that belongs to him is his vision of her.
Oh.
And
because
I found
also,
that.
P.S., nobody is that perfect. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but then that speaks to the how men throughout history have idolized women, their bodies, the mystery, you know, the power.
Right.
Which may or may not threaten some men and cause them to behave poorly.
Poorly.
Let me put on my psychology hat really quick. But yeah, the idealization
right.
of women, and you see that a lot in art, you know, just the beautiful skin and the, you know, everything that a woman should, quotation marks, have.
Right.
You know, this ideal, which then subsequently affects the real world. These depictions of these, you know, what comes first? Is it the ideal or is it the depiction? And then the ideal.
Right. So you have women feeling bad about themselves and men having ideals that aren't real.
Right.
Right. That makes... Hello. I've got menopause mouth.
Blah, 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 blah. So I thought that was really interesting.
So in your opinion, who... in your opinion, has sort of stolen back that? Who has done real art? Women depicting women or men depicting women? Do you have any examples?
real art? Like,
no, a real depiction, a depiction of a real woman, not an idealized woman.
That's a good question. I think art, one of art's jobs is to convey ideals.
Oh.
Ideals and ideas, and to elicit emotion. So one could say, like, when you said that, the first thing that came to mind, the first person who came to mind is Cindy Sherman. She's right. a photographer. Cindy Sherman is known for her self-portraits where she dresses up portraying idealized women in society as kind of a protest.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll make herself up to look like a, you know, 1970s disco roller skater, but in a grotesque way.
Right.
Like, this is not a woman. So it's hard to... I think it takes a lot of critical thinking skills. It takes a lot of really understanding. Maybe some artists rely on us to discover that distinction within their representation.
Mm.
So
maybe it's not their job to tell us what we're supposed to be seeing.
Right.
Art is just art.
That's the advertiser's job.
Oh,
that's
gross.
The manipulation. So I think artists, they're like, look, this is what I have for you. This is what's come out of me. This is what I see. This is how my emotion is manifesting,
mm-hmm.
or my ideals. Do with it what you will. How are you going to digest this? What does this mean to you? And it's up to the viewer or the listener to really look within themselves and find the answers. So if we look at, a picture of Madonna and Christ, and Christ is not a baby. He looks like a toddler, but he's small like a baby, and Madonna's limbs are not proportionate to her body, and it's all kind of askew.
Right.
But yet the complexion is beautiful, and the look of piousness on her face is, you know,
serene.
Unmistakable. Yeah. And the little folds of fat on the cherubic Christ are, you know, you just want to pinch him.
Right.
Where do you go with all that? How do you digest that? You know, some people look at it and go, oh, that's a pretty flat looking picture of, you know, Mary and Jesus.
Right.
Whatever. Who cares? But some people may look a little deeper and see other things there.
Mm-hmm.
And wonder where, where and why that representation came from.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends who is a fine artist, an incredible one, like mind-blowing. He's a painter, does really big pieces. I went to the Huntington Library with him once, and it's one of his favorite places on earth. And this man becomes the most excited little boy in the whole world when he's around art.
Right.
I mean, like, literally dashing from painting to painting and just, like, you know, stars in his eyes and everything. Anyway, so we're looking at one painting, and he's looking at it, and he says to me, you know, the artist was a douchebag. No, I'm sorry. That was bad delivery. The subject in this painting was obviously a douchebag. And I said, wow, how do you know? And so he deconstructed it for me. He said, this is obviously commissioned painting, commissioned by the subject. The artist was obviously not happy with this guy and did not like him. He was a douchebag. And this is how you tell. Pardon me. So he said, look at everything that's in the picture. He's got his hunting dog. He's got his rifle. He's got books. He's got jewelry. He's got all his little expensive tchotchkes.
Right.
He's wearing his fancy suit of clothes. He's sitting in a fancy chair. There's this, you know, beautiful pastoral scene behind him, out a window, rich fabrics. The painting's beautiful. But then you look at the look on his face, and it's, and he looks like a douchebag. Like, and so the way my friend explained this to me was, these artists had to live. They had to do this stuff. They had to be sitting in a room with this douchebag,
right,
for hours and hours. And God only knows what kind of antics they were privy to. You know, what did this guy treat his servants like crap? Did he treat the painter like crap?
Right.
And so they're little jabs. And if you look very carefully at these paintings that were not commissioned by the church or not, it wasn't the artist's choice to paint them.
Right.
You'll see who the subject really is, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
It's a little, you know, a little dig by the artist. But, you know, you look at portraits of queens and whatnot and, you know, the royalty, and they're portrayed probably better than they looked in real life.
Probably.
That artist wanted another job. You know what I mean?
You've heard the story about the Huntington family, where the Huntington Library is, the family that lived there.
Arabella.
Yes, Arabella, when she was old and her husband was dead, commissioned a painting. And the painter made her look beautiful. Mm-hmm. She was in her 80s.
Uh-huh.
And when she finally saw the painting, she said, "I don't look anything like this. I need you to redo it and make me look like I look."
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So I have a copy of a print copy of what the second one, the one where she really looked like herself and looked old.
So he didn't just paint over the first one. He made two completely separate paintings.
One, yeah.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah. That painting hangs when you go into the house part where the blue boy and all those paintings are.
Uh-huh.
When you walk into the entrance hallway, it's there. If next time you go, look for it.
Huh.
She's dressed all like in mourning. She's dressed in mourning.
Oh, yes, yes. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
That was the second painting.
That says a lot about Arabella, doesn't it?
Right. She had a lot of confidence.
She did. I didn't earn these wrinkles for you to take them away from me.
I think she said something exactly like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are mine. This is me.
That's funny because the older I get, the less I care about if I look bad in a picture.
Right.
If I see a picture of myself and I remember having fun that day or I'm in a cool place, that's what I care more about. But when I was younger,
oh yeah,
I really cared about what I look like in pictures, mm-hmm. but I just don't anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the good things about, I think, this time in our lives.
Yeah.
We're giving zero fucks.
Oh.
Or at least less fucks than before.
Do you have more notes, Kimmy?
I did, and I did kind of explore the biblical representation of women, Mary, virgin, you know, mm-hmm. pristine. Eve is
a seductress.
She's a temptress. Mm-hmm. She's kind of the downfall. Makes me sad. Delilah
mm-hmm.
is always depicted as being very beautiful. She's the seductress mm-hmm. that is the undoing of Samson. Mary Magdalene is usually pretty plain, I think, but she was a whore.
Well, that's the modernish interpretation of who she was.
Right.
But people think she was actually Jesus's wife.
Mm-hmm.
If he ever existed.
Yeah. Close to him. And then Greek and Roman mythology,
mm-hmm.
All of those marbles are exquisite.
Right.
And of course, the Greeks were all about proper proportion. They strove for perfection.
Right.
And it shows
mm-hmm.
Just in bodily form, facial features, which are, you know, that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty amazing, those Greeks.
For the time, with the materials they were working with, it's mind-blowing.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They Oh, yeah. And then I kind of started to think about Indian art.
From India or Native American
India.
Art?
India.
Okay.
Which is very interesting and I know very little about, so I shouldn't speak of at all. And there's a lot of gender fluidity.
There is,
within
yeah.
their deities, mm-hmm. Which is also another interesting kind of idea.
Even in the art, I feel, the men and women look very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also a Grateful Dead song that, after I started to think about the character in the song is portrayed as a male, but he has all these female attributes and how that kind of translates as either unity or ambiguity or I don't know. Egyptian art, which is pretty, you know, interesting, cut and dry. It was all designed for the afterlife, and it had a very specific purpose, and those mm-hmm. artists were trained for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. They were more like craftsmen.
More like craftsmen. Yeah, and the male and female characters, pharaohs, etc., were not as ornate and not as fully developed, partially because of the time period,
mm-hmm.
And also because of other reasons I don't know. And then I started thinking about the tarot deck and how that, you know, that's an old form of divination. Who are the characters in the major arcana? There's an empress. Justice is always depicted as a female.
Mm-hmm. Even to this day.
Even to this day. And I thought that was kind of interesting, too.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me.
It does to me, too. But why didn't the men rework that? Why wasn't that one reworked? Or is it... I would like to know more about why Justice is always depicted as a woman.
So you have more questions now than answers.
I always do. Always. Okay, so Lee Krasner was a mid-century artist. She was...
Mid-20th century?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She was Jackson Pollock's lady friend.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. They lived together. She did. She was also a well-known artist. And at one point, a critic said about her work that it was so good, you'd never be able to tell a woman had made it. Just thought I'd throw that one out there. And you're like, what difference does it make? Anyway.
Well, I mean, even as I was reading this book, I got, what is it called? Women, Art, and Society. And I was, and you know, the paragraphs are starting out with women artists, women artists, women artists. And I thought to myself, we don't run around calling men artists.
Right? Yeah.
What? Why are we distincting between these two?
Right.
That's not the word. I've got menopause brain. Why are we making a distinction between men and women artists? Why can't we just have artists?
Right. And that's how I've always interpreted. An artist is an artist. I don't care what junk you were born with, who you identify as now. I don't care. If you're making art, you're an artist, right?
Like, did you, in any of your research, find how often women are allowed to show in museums and galleries compared to men?
I didn't start number crunching.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No.
I thought maybe one of your rabbit holes was a data hole.
No, it wasn't a data hole. I was fully engulfed in, like, the ideas and the...
Oh!
Existential
stuff?
The existential stuff.
That sounds like you.
So, there are many notable artists who are also female now.
Who are also female. I like the way you said that.
Are you an art... I mean, who are you first? And then you get into the whole identity thing.
Ooh, if I asked you, who are you first? What are you first? What would you say?
A human.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, because I just think of my body. like,
my body.
I think of my body. That was funny. It was like when you said that, I saw my body, like my, just my,
your meat sack.
My meat sack. Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
Back to the identity thing again, right? Can we get away from that?
No, it's how we. That's part of how we're human. We have to categorize everything, including ourselves and all of our thoughts.
But by categorizing things and their thoughts, do we steal their true identity? This is a philosophical question that some philosophy guy had a long time ago.
Right. And we as women philosophers now are just coming on it because we weren't allowed to do it before. No, I'm just kidding.
Because maybe it's the menopause break. Wait, long time ago, women died before they had menopause, typically.
I mean, yeah.
A couple hundred years ago, what was the, like...
40.
Yeah, it was 40, somewhere between 40 and 50.
You'd have a bunch of kids and then die.
Right.
You didn't even get time to enjoy yourself after having children.
Huh. Dun, dun, dun.
We're past our expiration dates. What are we going to
do? We're crones. We're destined to be witches in the woods.
I'm excited about that.
Me too.
I want a little hovel covered by ivy.
Aww.
With maybe a hole in the top so sun can get in. And then I'll just do my pottery all day and be happy when my period's gone.
Yay! Once a month, full moon comes, and you'll be like, yes! Maybe that's fuck your period. Came from. Maybe that's what the witches were actually doing under the full moon. They're like, ha 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 ha, we're free. They're having a party. They're like, look, from now on, one party a month, no matter what. That's what's going to happen. Bring your magic mushrooms, bring your.
Your mead.
Your mead. It's party time, bitches. My hovel. Your hovel next month.
So Kim and I are having difficult periods, which leads us to believe maybe we're headed into our change of life pretty soon here.
Yeah.
Mine was particularly rough this month and is still not over. And I kept saying to myself and to other people, my period is trying to kill me. Mm-hmm. And at one point I told my husband, I'm losing it. Like my brain was just fried. And he said, is there anything I can do? And I said, can you use some of your switches and wires and relays to create something that just turns my uterus off? Because I'm done with it.
Stop.
I'm done with it.
It'll all be over soon.
But doing ceramics helped me feel better.
Did it?
Yeah.
A nice concrete, tactile, meditative thing.
Yeah.
That's another thing that art's good for.
Meditation?
Mm-hmm. Just art therapy. Just to think about one thing. Focus. For me, focusing is hard for me. I'm not good at that.
No. I was just
don't mince words, Cass.
I was thinking of art as expression versus art as therapy, and I feel like one is valued more than the other, obviously. But then it got me wondering, women have borne the brunt. Sorry, I'm closing my eyes because I'm trying to think of this very complex thing and how to make it into words. Have borne the brunt of the emotional workload in our society.
Oh, yeah.
For a really long time, and that doesn't leave a lot of time and energy for expression.
No.
So
not for me, especially.
Yeah.
And it starts to make me crazy.
Right. So when you're in charge of everyone else's lives and their emotions and their feelings and their life.
Right.
I feel like now I'm more creative at this age because a lot of that is over for me. You know, my children are grown.
Yeah.
And now I can go, wait, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
And how can I express myself about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. How do I let this out of my body rather than just kind of cycling it through into something
else? And then that
else.
Makes me think of George O'Keefe, you know, who didn't become an artist until later in life.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder how many women have done that. Like, oh, I've got time now.
Now's the time.
Right. Whereas a lot of men, you know, most men work really hard, but a lot of men are given that time. The women give them that time, you know?
Oh, well, look at Picasso.
Right.
I mean, many of the prolific male artists who were male.
Nice one.
You know, they had somebody keeping house for him.
Right.
They had help. So.
What's your favorite piece of art depicting a woman, would you say?
I did all this fucking research and I didn't even think of that.
God damn you. What's your favorite piece of art?
Oh,
I know that's hard.
Man, that's a tough one. That one's so hard. Van Gogh's Mulberry Tree and the Cypress series. Those have always really moved me. And they're so, you know, they're so well known. It seems like kind of a cheap pick, but it's true.
As far as invoking feelings, I mean, he hits that nail on the head, at least for me.
Yeah.
Maybe because he was depressed, etc.
Well, and if you look at once you become familiar with his work, you can see where he is.
Mentally, yeah,
you can see where he is mentally in his paintings.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating. That's a different level of connection.
Right.
You know. Oh, gosh. There's so many. Some of the ancient pieces are, to me, just captivating. Surely because of their antiquated status. They're so old.
Right.
You know what I mean? You look at these encaustic coffin coverings of the you know, like icons of the Sinai and that kind of stuff, and it's just like, holy cow, this stuff's been around for a while.
Right.
This is some old shit right here. And it's still here. And those eyes looked at other people too.
Right.
Not just me. Like, here I am, like, animating pieces of art that are not. But,
I know when I go to the Getty Villa, that's where all the, you know, Greek and Roman stuff is.
Oh, yeah. The Etruscan stuff. It's so beautiful and.
But I do that same thing, especially with all of the old vases, all the vessels. I'll stare at one vessel for a really long time and go, oh my God, this vessel is like 4,000 years old.
And it's still here.
Right.
That's what freaks me out about all the pottery and the glass and stuff. Like, what?
Right.
It's still here. I can't keep glass in my house for more than a month. Golly, and you've got these beautiful, intricate pieces of Venetian glass, and I went to the Met, which was like, I couldn't really contain myself. I embarrassed my family, I think, because I was so excited, like twitchy excited.
Yeah.
And there's a piece, like a wall of Tiffany glass.
Oh my God.
And it is mesmerizing. It's mesmerizing. It's you know, stained glass, huge. And if you look at each little tiny piece of glass and realize that glass was made by somebody and then cut by somebody and then leaded by somebody, designed by somebody, like in its essence, it represents all of the hands that went into the single piece of work. Every little piece of glass, every little hand that touched them, every idea, every person who participated in that big, giant, beautiful piece of stained glass. It's like a, you know.
You know, when I'm in situations like that, I often think of human society like an ant colony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, what are we all working for? We all have a purpose here. We're all, you know, shoveling dirt around with our tiny little hands. And we're all building something together.
Mm-hmm.
this society. And part of the society that we as humans build is art that's beautiful, that invokes feeling, that, you know, tells a story, depicts historical things, you know, myths and all that. So sometimes if I, things like that, those kinds of ideas get too big in my brain, I think of us as an ant colony. I don't know why I'm telling you that. But it makes more sense that way to me. Like if we're all working as one to make our world, our culture more beautiful, then that makes sense. If you think about, like, my mom who crochets and knits and, you know, and it'll take her months to do one thing. And it's not really worth much money, but she's spent, you know, 6 months of her life doing it. That's, to me, that's like a love. That's like loving humanity enough to go, look, I'm going to give this to you guys, you know, like. I don't know what I'm trying to explain.
To make beautiful things. It's the juju. It's the hoopity boobity juju. And what happens to Nanny when she's doing it?
Right.
What do her brain waves look like? What is lighting up inside of her head? What is happening with her energy that we can't see or don't have the senses to see? There's something going on there.
Hoobity boobity?
It's the hoobity boobity juju that we're not privy to.
There's also the pride of work and the the satisfaction of having done something and done it well.
Mm-hmm. And the challenge of figuring things out, the perseverance, the...
And every little time that someone attempts something and makes a mistake and tries again and gets it right and then perfects it over time, that's all contributing to our society as a whole.
Yeah.
That's contributing expertise and loveliness. And I think that's important in our culture.
It is.
Expertise and loveliness. That's the name of my new band. We're at Coachella next year.
Expertise and loveliness?
Yeah.
Are you duo?
No, it's just me.
Oh, okay. Well, you're Gemini.
I have no expertise, and I'm not lovely.
That's not true.
I'm going to be vile and foul.
That's not true at
all. And play unsyncopated music off tone. Is off tone a word? I don't know. I have reverse puberty brain.
That's all. It's all working for me. I know what you're saying.
No, what am I trying to say? You know what I'm trying to say.
I do. Toneless? No tone?
I think we should wrap it up. My brain is melting. It's 100 degrees.
It is.
Any last thoughts about art, Kimmy?
I love it. It makes me so happy.
I think people should go back and listen to our show that we did about women in advertising.
Oh, yeah.
What was that one called? Oh, it's called You've Come a Long Way, Baby?
Right.
Yeah, go look for that one. Listen to that one and then listen to this one.
Curio Podcast is a Porch Swing production. Big thanks to all of our contributors and special guests. For more info, please visit Twitter at Podcast Curio, Curio Podcast on Facebook, and curiopodcast.org. And remember, Curio Podcast loves you.